Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Mr. Gadget once again, and I had something that occurred to me. I've got actually several different ideas for some podcasts coming along, but I had a specific idea that came to me this weekend when I was doing some cleanup of things around the house. We've got some things going on where we're going to get some new flooring. And actually, we've already bought the flooring, and it's sitting in the basement of the house, and it's going to go in the second floor of the house. So I need to clear out that space so the carpet can be pulled up and the hardwood floors can be put down. And this involves clearing out a bunch of stuff in my man cave, my ham shack, my, evil scientist lab. I call it the pseudo studios, S-U-D-O, studios, pseudo. Anyway, even though that's not where I actually podcast from, I podcast in a Honda, just like Bay Gates in a Honda Civic. Well, I'm in a Honda Odyssey. I used to have a few broadcasts that I put out there, not anything serious, so any kind of serious hosting, but Mr. Gadget's Technological Odyssey was the one theoretical podcast that I kind of did a few episodes around in various spots, most of which probably are out of business. You can't get to that audio anymore. Not that it was anything really great. Anyway, so I had this idea that I needed to, I knew that I needed to actually get that area cleared out. Now, amongst these various and sundry kinds of projects, which my wife is semi-retired and has time enough between doing a consulting job that she has, she still has some time to do these big projects, and then I am caught in the wake of the project, right? And, the currents are shifting here as to where the priorities lie sometimes. Well, we also had some needs for some storage kinds of issues that were happening in our garage, because I haven't been able to park my car in the garage for, a couple of years now. And so I had some stuff out there that I needed to go through. And then in order to clear out my man cave, now my man cave is on the second floor of the house. So theoretically, it's not really a cave. It's more like my wizard's tower. If I'm a techno wizard, which is one of the favorite characters, I think, and mysterious kinds of characters from Babylon 5, one of my favorite television shows of that very target-rich sci-fi television show environment that existed back in the 90s. And Babylon 5 was one of my favorites. In fact, I posted some stuff on Google Plus about some quotations from Babylon 5, and it really reminded me of how much I really liked that show. And one of those, one of the mysterious kinds of characters that wandered through the Babylon 5 space station was the techno mages, and they could do amazing kinds of things. They're kind of vaguely almost, how to say this, they were kind of vaguely steampunk, only not steampunk, but they had like staffs that would do little Dick and Slattery kinds of things, but they didn't dress very steampunky. They mostly dressed like, pages, they had robes and stuff. Anyway, you didn't see them very much, so they were a big mystery, but they could do some pretty, amazing things, ostensibly just by waving the wand or whatever, but there is technology involved, right? So I have my wizard's tower up here, and amongst the wizard's tower, along with a anteroom from the main room that is a door that leads out above the garage to a big storage area. It's, that's not finished or anything, but it's got flooring. And so I have, between the actual room itself and the storage area out beyond, I have massive, massive piles of carp. It's an anagram. And I need to go through all this stuff, at least the stuff that's in the carpeted area, right? Because I need to move it all out of there so the carpet can be pulled up and the wood flooring can be put down. It's not that pleasant up there. It's still air-conditioned, but it gets a bit hot on the second floor of the house there because it's all open. It's like a great room, and so this is kind of just off of a kind of balcony that looks over the living room space. And so all the air just rises up if it's hotter air, and so it gets a bit uncomfortable there, especially in the garage area, so I really can't do any serious work there. And it's been temperatures in the Fahrenheit above 100. I forget exactly what that is in your Celsius, but it's a high number. And not very pleasant. You know, we're talking about temperatures on a regular basis that are above your body temperature. And it's not the most pleasant thing to do. So, like a giant, you know, sliding puzzle, only in 3D. You remember those slider puzzles you worked on when you were a kid, where it was a grid of 9 pieces, usually. Although I suppose you could do this with a 16-piece 4x4. But I remember the 9-piece ones very vividly. Maybe there were 4x4 ones also. But there's one piece that isn't there, and that allows you to slide the little squares around. And it's in a random pattern, of course. You slide the squares around until you arrange whatever the picture is supposed to look like, right? That's how you solve the puzzle. But instead of like putting it together like a jigsaw puzzle, you only have one move that you can make, well, 2 at any given time, right? Maybe 3, depending on where the hole is and what you can slide into that hole. And you're always kind of rearranging things, and then that changes the relationships, and eventually, if you're good at it, you can make it into the picture. Well, this is kind of like a sliding puzzle, because there are things that are upstairs in the Wizard's Tower. There is also some older boxes of stuff that are downstairs in the basement area, and I need that floor space in order to move the stuff that I'm keeping out of the Wizard's Tower to move it down to the basement, right? So there's a hole that I need to create in the basement to move the stuff out of the upstairs, but I'm not going to move everything out of the upstairs because I am going to actually call through this and very, very strictly bart the stuff. I'm going to be very, very ruthless at my barting. Barting is a term that has come into use amongst a certain number of my other podcasting family. I do a lot of listening to a lot of different podcasts, and there's a kind of group of people that I listen to, and I don't want to upset anybody, but, you know, I have a slider, and I use iOS devices and things like that, as well as Android and Linux and all these kinds of things. And so there is a mostly Macintosh. In fact, her little catch line for the show is it's got an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Allison Sheridan and the Mozilla Cast podcast. It's more than slight, but it's kind of a in joke, right? But she has this ever so slight Macintosh bias. Well, she has a pretty strong Macintosh bias. And one of the people who contribute to the show and is pretty active in the Macintosh community, especially the international Macintosh podcasting community, is Bart Bouchatz, who is a Belgian who happens to be living right now in Ireland. And don't you just love the internet? Because, you know, you can have regular kind of communications from these people all over the world. And, you know, when you're a podcast listener, you know lots about them because it comes out during the podcast. And so you feel like, you know, they're kind of maybe not a friend, but they're at least an acquaintance, right? And Bart refers to, he invented the term himself when he's an avid digital photographer. Very interesting digital photography. I would, you should actually try looking up some of the things that he has, because his photography is really quite beautiful. But, you know, when you're a digital photographer, unlike the film days of photography, and I may talk about my film photography past sometime on the project, but, or on the podcast here, but back when it was film, you used to really frame everything because you only had 36 pictures on the standard roll of 35 millimeter film, right? And it cost you money to get them, developed. And so, yeah, if it was really important, you might bracket that and take, two or three shots with slightly different exposures to make sure you got it, because you only had that one chance, right? And you couldn't just take a gazillion pictures. And now, especially with the large capacity that we have on the memory cards and things like that, you tend to just take a gazillion pictures. And then what do you do with all those? Well, Bart says, and I think he's right, I don't do this now, mind you, but I agree with him in his sentiment here, that you should really, really be very, very critical of those pictures when you're doing that first pass on them. And you should throw away all the drops and only keep a tiny percentage of those pictures that are going to be worth any further effort. And then you use whatever methodology you're having. And I'm going to try to teach myself some GIMP along the way and other kinds of open source tools. I don't really know Photoshop, so I don't have that disadvantage of having to relearn everything. And so I'm pursuing that from a photographer's perspective. I am not a visual artist in any way, shape, or form, but I can take a halfway decent photograph, maybe even a pretty good photograph if I'm on my game, and maybe even something that might be artistic in some way, but that's more of a rarity. But I can at least participate in the visual arts through photography. So I'm not going to use the GIMP for actually drawing of any kind of images. Even with a image manipulation program, it's not my artistic talent, right? So anyway, so before you ever do any processing further, you should really look at those hard and throw out a bunch of them and only put any further effort into things that are really worth the effort. Well, I'm planning on barting my personal possessions here. I may have mentioned previously on the podcast that I'm attempting to get rid of a lot of the atoms that are in my life and keep the electrons. So anything that I have as a book, I'm really trying to get electronic copies of the book. Magazines, I'm trying to go to all electronic versions of the magazines and things like that. And so a lot of the things that are in the piles of CARF, it's an anagram, downstairs in the basement area that I'm trying to clear out, are older magazines. Some older books also. And so I found myself this weekend, okay, we're coming around, right, to the start of the story, I found myself working the first, move on this slider puzzle to get everything out of my wizard's tower area, and some of that's going to involve barting some of these things. I've got some projects up there that I just know I'm never going to complete, and some of them aren't even worth completing anymore. The technology is so old, and it's a funny thing. It's not old enough to really be cool and useful. The thing I love about radios, and you probably already heard the amateur radio show, assuming that got in to the queue and all that kind of stuff and was legible. And I am into amateur radio and getting radioactive again, and that's a cool thing. Some of the old equipment in amateur radio is just as functional today as it ever was and is still useful, but computing equipment, not so much, right? So a lot of these things are technological kinds of things from years ago that have just sat up there in these piles of carp and need to be tossed, right? So I'm going to be throwing away a lot of that stuff. I actually went through a miniature version of this when I did a move in my workplace to a new cubicle, and I made the conscious decision, I'm not just going to drag all this stuff that I've been carrying around since last millennium and haven't touched since last millennium. I'm actually going to throw this stuff away, or at least a major portion of it. And I did that in the process. We have some new people that are joining our group from another portion of the company where we decided to shut down that software development project. We were going to get into insurance kinds of things, and then the decision was made that that didn't make sense from a business kind of aspect to get into the more direct software within the insurance business. The company I work for does a lot of work with insurance companies, but that's through a partner, and so we'll continue to do that kind of business. But we are going to get much more active into the managing of accounts for insurance companies. And they made some adjustments to the business plans and decided that that really didn't make sense. And so those people then are looking for jobs within the company. Quite a few of them have come into our group because we have, quite frankly, had open recs and haven't really been able to find people who could fill those recs. If you're a Java programmer and are in need of a job and willing to move to Kansas City area or live within, you know, job districts in Kansas City, we still probably have some open recs that are going to be coming up here. So, one of these guys that's moved here, and he's, you know, my 20 years around the company, I've seen him here and there, you know, around the way, don't really know him or anything. He's got like 15 or 20 boxes that got boxed up in his last place. And I'm thinking, really, I mean, this stuff is stuff you've been dragging with you for years. You just need to let it go, you know? And that's kind of the idea here, is just to let it go. So I'm going to sum of that stuff up there, throw that away, combine things into boxes and things like this. So I've actually got three different areas that I'm working on here. I got this basement area, and I got stuff out in the garage that I'm trying to, you know, get out of there, and I've got the second story area. So to start making the hole, essentially, I started out with that area down in the basement. And, of course, I did this in the stupidest way possible. I didn't stay down in the basement where it was nice and cool. No, I took that stuff out to the garage where it was still very hot, with it being 105 degrees outside the garage. It was still pretty dang hot in that garage, and I did my sorting in there. Don't ask. There's literally so little movement area down in that basement area that I'm working in that I literally couldn't even get a rolling trash can in there to throw the stuff away. So it was easier to carry those boxes up and get them there, and they'll be more convenient for trash day, et cetera, et cetera. I was stupid, okay? Anyway, so here I am, and I am going through these magazines, and it just so happened that a bunch of these magazines and several of the books were from anywhere from, well, some of the books were definitely from my very early Macintosh days. So they would have been from back in the 90s. And a lot of the magazines were also from the 90s. And in fact, I thought it was kind of funny because most of the magazines that I made note of, and I was actually looking through to see if there was anything worthwhile to try to look up that article or anything in here that was going to be worth keeping the magazine, because there was something useful for within it. And most of them were from almost exactly 15 years ago, because they were from 97, 98, right in that time frame. So we're talking about just about anywhere from maybe 14 to 16 years ago. Now, when you think about the dog years that exist for, you know, technology, that's a huge amount of time. Thusly, a lot of these things, there's just nothing in there that is worthwhile anymore to justify keeping it around. And so huge amounts of them went straight into the trash can. And so I'm debating now. I think probably that trash can, since it's nothing but paper, I'm actually going to haul it over and stuff all that into the recycle. There's recycle available here at my city, and it'll take a while to get all those things, you know, into the bin. But I think that's probably what I'm going to do with all that, to be a little bit more, responsible for all this paper going into the system. And so some of it were some old books, and, you know, I've got a couple of books that I claimed were on the bubble, but I know I'm going to eventually just throw them away. They mostly have sentimental value. They have some significance if you know anything about the history of some of these technologies, but not to be worth any money or something. It's just, you know, a notable kind of thing. Early on, there was a particular Macintosh book that was really pivotal in the early days of Macintosh, and I had my copy of that. Now I'm going to throw it away eventually. But you know how you get about these things, and you can't. You got to throw this stuff away. You got to let it go. How much technology do you have in your life like this? You just got to let it go. My friend Nightwise is very good about this. Once that technology is actively being used in his life, he finds somebody to buy it from him and uses that money to buy his next piece of technology. And he's much better than I am in this regard. So here I am, and I'm looking through these magazines to see if there's anything worthwhile. And a few of the magazines that are particularly of note, I was struck by the kinds of articles that were in these magazines. Now, some of the magazines I had were Nuts and Bolts, which is still a magazine that exists, and has pretty much, through the years, changed around to being a all-about-microcontrollers kind of magazine. It's very much into the building your own robots and microcontrollers and those kinds of things. And there were some proto-robotics kind of articles here, you know, the 15 years ago or so. But the other things I thought were of interest that were still in Nuts and Bolts back then was there was a regular robots kind of oriented column, but, you know, the controllers for that weren't as developed as they are now. And it was really in the kind of proto stage of getting into controllers and things like that. And then there was also a regular column about laser experimentation. So you could buy the laser, these would be tube lasers, not semiconductor lasers. And there are guys that were doing experiments with lasers enough of a hobbyist kind of level that there was a column on it. There was a column on amateur radio kinds of topics and things like that. I noticed that one of the guys that I talked about before, Don Lancaster, who was a major kind of person who was involved in early computers, very, very early computers, he wrote a column called Resource Bin for Nuts and Bolts back then. And Don's an interesting character. He was talking about what was his choice of computers at the time and his secondary computer, because he had a pretty advanced publish-on-demand kind of thing of his books that he had published through the years. And there's still enough interest in the books that he could still make money doing them publish-on-demand. And he had a Macintosh, some current Macintosh at the time, or maybe not even a absolutely, you know, biggest and best, but a Macintosh that he used for that. But his primary computer, his computer that he really loved, was he always hacked PostScript. He started hacking PostScript way early, and this is not just using PostScript as a, you know, way to produce documents on a laser printer. This is using PostScript, the computer language, to actually do computation. He would feed things into the PostScript because it was the equivalent of, in today's world, you've got this really cool graphics processor that's capable of all this number crunching. And so now we have programs that take advantage of the number crunching that's available through the graphics processor that isn't actually related to display graphics on the screen, right? The folding at home and the study at home projects mostly use your graphics processor capabilities, right? Well, this would be the equivalent of that in the time frame. The graphics boards were not really there with the heavy, you know, capabilities of the number crunching, but your PostScript engine could do that in your laser printer. And he would actually do amazing things with PostScript. I mean, he would handwrite PostScript stuff. You know, something else that Mark Bouchot always gets mad about is in almost every week in the show, at least every week that he's on, they have a security discussion about what's the latest security issues and things like that. And so, of course, since another week or maybe a fortnight has gone by, of course there are new vulnerabilities that have been discovered in PDF, and Adobe has put out a new PDF, you know, patch to patch the vulnerability. And he just gets mad. He keeps on saying, and this is, it's a document format. Why does it have an aspect of being able to run a string of code like it's a programming language? Well, now I swear I'm right on this. I have looked it up on Google, but I was there, and either I'm in an alternate reality or, you know, somebody correct me, but I swear that PDF did not always stand for portable document format. Initially, it stood for PostScript document format. It is a way to have a finalized version of a PostScript generated piece of code to generate your document, but it was a document format where it was all contained within the document format. And interpreting of that document had to include interpreting of the PostScript code that might be part of the document. Thusly, you have a document format that involves, you know, an ability to interpret some code. Now, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember that it was originally PostScript document format, and they rebranded it as portable document format so that people understood that it could be used not just on a PostScript printer. And for whatever reason, right, they renamed it, they rebranded it, kind of like Lotus Notes, which is in its fourth or fifth iteration of what it's to be used for. And I've lived through all these different, you know, oh, you use it for this, you use it for that. IBM has been brilliant at rebranding Lotus Notes for whatever is the latest thing that they need it to be. And so it was like that with the PDF format, the PostScript document format. And so he, you know, Lancaster was still writing a thing in there about sourcing parts and a lot of his resource bins in that era. Because I was just, you know, looking through the table of contents of these magazines and kind of reminiscing here, right? And a lot of his things were about where do you get parts and where do you get data sheets and how do you find out how to use this, that, and the other kind of, you know, piece of equipment or, you know, integrated circuit. Popular electronics and radio electronics, both still existed, okay? And, you know, there aren't any electronics magazines anymore that are independent kind of magazines. Those have all gone by the wayside. But popular electronics and radio electronics both existed. Admittedly, radio electronics, you would expect this, but both of them at the time had amateur radio kinds of issues in several of the columns that were involved, as well as various types of electronics. There was actually, it was either in popular or radio, I can't remember which, there was an article I noticed that was, you know, you may not need to use a TTL IC or, you know, any of the popular IC kinds of things. You could use transistor logic to do certain types of things. So they were talking about going back to the retro way of actually building transistorized logic rather than using an IC for things. And there was still a lot of building. There was a lot of projects of, you could get these parts and put them together and get them to do useful things. Now, and a lot of it revolved around, you know, some of the higher tech kinds of aspects of, you know, getting your geekiness on, which included, you know, the whole aspect of the amateur radio kinds of communications and things like that. Now, turn the, you know, Wayback Machine dial back forward again, and there was kind of an interim time there when that was really kind of the starting point of surface mount kinds of things. In fact, I can remember just towards the end of the electronics magazines, there was a little bit of surface mount, and they had tried to do some projects, but you know, that's just not as easy for at least normal human beings to get into. You know, it's not as easy to do the surface mount stuff as it is the other types of components. And it got to be a world of electronics that were more and more complex and capable of doing much more miraculous things. Don't get me wrong, right? To be a techno-mage, one truly has to have some pretty cool electronics to accomplish, you know, all these magic spells. And you can't just use transistor logic to do this anymore, right? It would be the size of your trunk of your car or the boot of your car or whatever is your, you know, term for that thing that you can put, you know, luggage in, usually in the back of the car, right? So all of these types of things were requiring smaller and smaller and more miniaturized, and we got away from the things that we could make with our hands. And then, about 8 years ago or so, right, so we're talking 14, 13 years ago, we started less and less to have any kind of thing that we could make with our own hands. A few guys got heavily into putting together parts to build their own computers, right? Some still to this day, right, put together those parts for computers, but that's really a board that has all of that kind of stuff, and you're just basically plugging in modules, right, to get it to all work right. Yeah, you're gluing down the cooler on the CPU and some things like that, but it's not the same thing as really building it, you know, getting together the parts and soldering it together and all that kind of stuff. And I think people found that there was a sense of missing something there, and thusly, when O'Reilly came out with Make Magazine, and the microcontrollers started getting to be more and more capable, that movement, I think, comes out of that wanting to create something that I built this myself, right, kind of aspect, that kind of joy that you get when you turn it on and you don't get the smoke, right, because you can't let the magic smoke out of the electronics or the magic goes away. And that particular device does whatever it is that it's supposed to do. And it gives you a feeling of accomplishment, and it gives you a rush, and that was gone, and I think that's what the maker kind of thing has brought back. And I encourage you to find something that you're interested in that allows you to have that kind of hands-on with your electronics. There, a lot of the amateur radio guys talk about how it's too much of an appliance-driven black box kind of a thing. And the newer radios are all just no one. I mean, if you're lucky, you might have a high-level understanding of how the block diagram makes it be a functional radio. But you could no more get in there and repair it if anything went wrong, because it's all little tiny, you know, surface mount kinds of electronics and things like that. And so that's why they like building these small radios that are maybe transmitters or even transmitters and receivers, that they understand it and they can take it apart and put it back together and they can modify it and things like that. But there's that. There's the microcontrollers that you can use for robotics or other kinds of things. The whole maker movement is just rampant with all kinds of interesting ideas. There's some guys here in town that are doing that had this one really kind of crazy maker idea. I meant to talk about it from the Maker Faire. Met them when I was working at the Maker Faire here in Kansas City that we had. And I'll send in, so we can include in the show notes, this. They're called the Kansas City Air Pirates, I think. KC Air Pirates is who they're, is what they call their group. And you know these quadcopters? Okay, these little drone kinds of copters that had the four propellers. Well, they were going to take AR as the company that commercially makes those, although at least a couple of the guys in the local Make KC group make their own quadcopters, right? But the AR is a quadcopter that's commercially available. One, I have one myself. I fly a little bit. Its chief problem is that it's got a limited size for the battery, and so it's a constant thing with aircraft, right? The constant thing is the size of the battery compared with the weight of the battery. And it's a constant, you know, thing back and forth. And so they found a very interesting way to circumvent that, and it's got application well beyond what just having a little model aircraft, you know, quad helicopter flying for a long period of time, right? In fact, I think probably I will go ahead and just tease that as something that I will talk about in a future podcast, because it's a fascinating aspect and kind of relates to the whole get off this rock thing that I've talked about before. So find yourself something that allows you to get down into the electronics more. If it involves actually soldering parts to a board, that's a good idea. I think you should try that, at least to get a feeling for what it's like. And you can make some pretty interesting kinds of things with that, you know, capability. Maybe not as complex as that computer that you have that's sitting on your desk, but you can build your own MP3 player. Did you know that? You can actually put together the parts to have an MP3 player to listen to things like this podcast. And I think probably it would have the capabilities of MP3 as well as AUG and other kinds of formats, right? It won't be as small as that little MP3 player that you can buy from a commercial entity, but you built it yourself, and you can modify it. You can get it to do different things in different ways. And that's really something that it's always been a big interest of mine in electronics. It's what got me on this path of pursuing things with electronics, which has then led me to my career in technology all these years. And it's still a fascinating kind of thing. And in reality, there's all the possibilities you ever had before, back when people were building these kinds of things, plus new possibilities here in the modern day. And so this is just kind of a tour down memory lane of where we were 15 years ago. Think about this. It was still PowerPC, rather slow PowerPC-based Macintosh machines. This was still a time frame when, and I can remember this from some other things that were happening in my professional career also, we were still talking about hard drives that were in the megabytes range more typically than the terabytes range. In fact, I think about 98 or so was when I went out to one insurance customer out on the West Coast. I don't go to the West Coast of the U.S. nearly as much as I go to the East Coast, just by the nature of where my clients usually are. But I was visiting a customer out in the L.A. area, and they told me that they were not going to use the archival storage that most of our clients at the time would use, which involved a laser optical drive for permanent storage. Oh no, they had a terabyte server, and they would just keep on adding drives to their terabyte server and would never have to have any other type of archival storage. They were just going to save everything on that server. Okay? I walk around with a terabyte of data in two or three USB sticks, on me every day of my life. Think about it. In 15 years, how far we've come. And so it was just kind of a tour down memory lane, and got me thinking about it, and I had some time to record this. And so if you're doing something like this, or you've got something that you remember of the history of technology here, take us on your own, you know, techno-archaeology discussion here. What do you find when you poke around in some of that old stuff that you really should throw away? And let us know what it was that got you interested in computers and in electronics and all that type of thing. And what kind of things you're trying to do to revive some of that, rekindle some of that initial interest that, you had in those kinds of pursuits. So until then, this is Mr. Gadget's kind of digging himself out of the giant paws of carp and getting nostalgic a bit along the way about some of these things that have passed by the wayside and how far we come. And I look forward to talking to you next time about something else, maybe about those quadcopters and more ideas on how to get off this rock. But until then, be careful out there on the technological frontier, because you never know when that big pile of stuff next to you might just topple over if you try to just move one thing. And we'll talk to you later. Bye now.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.